Listen up, true crime fans.
There's a big murder trial underway.
Dateline is launching a new podcast with Andrea Canning.
Welcome to Dateline True Crime Weekly.
We'll cover breaking crime news around the country with the best reporters on the case, NBC News analysts and Dateline producers on the ground.
Over. Break it down for us.
You'll just get behind-the-scenes scoops from crime scenes to courtrooms.
So tell us what he said.
Listen to Dateline True Crime Weekly now and catch new episodes every Thursday.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine unlocking a version of yourself that's unstoppable, where mental barriers no longer hold you back. Listen to Mentally Stronger with me, Amy Morin, therapist and international bestselling author, here to guide you on a journey to reaching your greatest potential. Every Monday, I bring you into conversations with some of the most fascinating minds, experts, authors, entrepreneurs, athletes, and musicians. They don't just share stories, they reveal the mental strategies that propelled them to the top. But here's the real magic. At the end of each episode, I break down their wisdom into practical therapist-approved advice. In my solo episodes, I dive deep into the techniques that build mental strength. It's like having your own personal therapy session as you discover how to turn these insights into steps you can take right now. This podcast isn't just for those facing mental health challenges. It's for anyone who wants to push their limits, achieve peak performance, and truly thrive. Are you ready to unlock your full potential? Then it's time to become mentally stronger. Subscribe to Mentally Stronger with therapist Amy Morin, available wherever you love to listen to podcasts.
What Was That Like? Contains adult language and content and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to What Was That Like? I'm your host, Scott Johnson. This is a show where we talk to regular people, people just like you or just like me, who have found themselves in an extremely unusual situation. We'll hear their stories and get inside their head because we all want to know, what was that like? More information about each episode at whatwasthatlike.com. Here we go. Today we've got a really fun episode that's going to make you smile. My guest today is Robin, and Robin likes to have fun. She's different. And she's on today's show to tell us about an experience she had. She was hired by the Oscar Mayer Hot Dog Company to drive the Wienermobile. And I realize some people might not be familiar with the Wienermobile, especially those outside the U.S. What we're talking about here is a large vehicle that's designed to look like a giant hot dog. Yes, this is actually a street-legal vehicle, 27 feet long. That's about 9 meters. If you're in the U.S., you might be surprised someday and see one traveling on a street right there in your city. And while this kind of vehicle seems like it would be unique, there are actually 6 of them traveling the country at any given time. They show up at grocery store grand openings, theme parks, pickle festivals, all kinds of events, and the drivers give out merch such as Weenie Beanies, Wienermobile Hot Wheels cars, and the ever-popular Wiener Whistles. Well, my friend Robin decided that she wanted to be a Wienermobile driver. So today she's going to talk about how she made herself stand out from the other 1,000 applicants and got the job, and what the job is actually like. And a couple other things. Robin lives in New York City. You've heard of The Moth, right? Really popular podcast. In New York, they regularly do storytelling competitions, and Robin has competed in these. They're called Story Slams, and she has actually won. And at the end of the episode, I asked her to tell me about the time she was able to meet the comedy legend Jerry Stiller. Great story. So I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. If you'd like to support the show and get access to all the bonus exclusive content, you can do that at whatwasthatlike.com/support. And now, here's Robin. How long is the Wienermobile?
The Wienermobile is 27 feet long. However, the one that I drove back in the day was 23 feet long. And I wish I could tell you how many hot dogs long that is, because that used to be a fun fact that we knew. A fun Frankfurter fact.
Why do you know why they changed the length?
Probably because they changed the type of car that it's based on. The one that I drove was based on a Chevy van chassis, and the newer ones are GMC. I think they're based on GMC trucks.
So how do you end up getting a job like this? I mean, nobody ever thinks about, wow, I want to grow up and drive the Wienermobile, but maybe you did.
I had never seen it before. I grew up outside of Hartford, and I later found out that the Wienermobile rarely went to New England. They used to travel to a lot of people who grew up in Chicago know about the Wienermobile because they had a plant there. And in Philly, they had a factory there as well. So those were some of the more concentrated areas where the Wienermobile would travel back like a really long time ago. And so I'll tell you about how I got it in a second. But so the Wienermobile program started in 1936, and they were the very first company to ever create a mobile marketing program. And what they did initially was they had these little people chefs who were essentially the spokespeople or mascots, if you will. And they had drivers taking them around, and they would hand out little wiener whistles. They called those people little Oscars. And you might know one of them because he is in The Wizard of Oz. His name is Meinhard Robbie, and he played the coroner. So that section where he's like, as coroner, I must have her, I thoroughly examined her. Do you remember that part?
Confession time.
Don't tell me you've never seen The Wizard of Oz. You're going to kill me if you tell me
that. It's a weird fact about me, but I have never seen The Wizard of Oz.
Listeners, you need to stop right now and put some kind of, send a message. I don't know. Why haven't you seen it? I'm sorry to hijack this. You've asked me how I got the job, and I'm already like, what?
whenever we're at a group party and you play that game, like write down three things about yourself and people have to find out or decide which one's not true. That's the one that always fools them, because I guess everybody's seen it.
You know what's crazy about the fact that you're telling me this right now? Last week, I hosted a few storytelling shows for a client. And we did two truths and a lie because I wanted to do a lot of engagement with the audience. And one of the things that crossed my mind, because I'm actually a horrible moviegoer and I haven't seen The Matrix, but I thought to say to tell the audience that I've never seen The Wizard of Oz. Because wow. I was like, they're going to be like, that's insane. That's a lie.
Of course not. Everybody's seen that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. Your listeners are going to appreciate the song I just sang, because they're going to be like, I know exactly who you're talking about. Anyway. Okay.
I'm sure they will. Yeah.
Anyway, I don't mean, I'm just teasing you, you know, because people will say to me, you've never seen The Matrix? I'm like, no, I don't make any references to it because I'm not going to know.
Well, I've never seen Star Wars either. So,
oh my God. Where did you grow up?
I've seen other movies. I like different types of movies.
Okay. That's fair.
Anyway, we're 5 minutes in. We've gone off the rails completely already.
I know. I'm sorry. I mean, I love puns, and we've already gone on a detour. If you want to do like a whole travel driving, you know, connected to cars, Wienermobile puns. So anyway, so I'd never seen the Wienermobile before, and I was a senior at Syracuse University, and I was studying writing for television, radio, and film, and marketing. And I saw a poster for the Wienermobile, and it was this bright turquoise or like royal blue background with this Wienermobile image. It was all illustrated with this party hat on it, and I was like, what is this thing? And by the way, the economy was in the toilet at this time, but it didn't matter because this is a much longer story. I'll try to give you a very abridged version of it. But essentially, I had a really horrible experience in college freshman year where I was bullied by about 60 guys. And they called me this name. They thought I looked like a guy from a movie. Let's see if you know this movie, Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Uh-huh. Spicoli? Okay.
No, not Spicoli. It was the science teacher, Mr. Vargas. Anyway, so they thought I looked like this guy, and they called me Vargas morning, noon, and night, and they would call and wake me up in the middle of the night and whisper behind me in class and corner me in the elevator, and they just made my life hell. And anyway, so all I wanted to do was on-air work, and I was terrified throughout most of college. So my senior year, I was in a really, really low state. I was incredibly depressed, which I was never like that before. And then I see this poster for the Wienermobile, and I'm like, oh my God, this thing looks so fun and so me. And what I found out, because I went to an information session, and I found out that they were looking for people to not only drive the Wienermobile, but serve as their spokespeople. And they wanted people who would travel in a region and do PR for them. And that meant they'd be on TV and on the radio and in the paper and make people's days essentially everywhere you went. And oh, and the best part, I was like, oh, I get to sell hot dog puns every day. Like this, they're basically going to pay me to be myself. And so everything about it just screamed my name because it was endlessly creative. You were meeting new people all the time. And because I felt like I had missed out on a lot of opportunities in college to really express myself, my voice, and be on TV and be on the radio, I like didn't join campus TV or radio because of what had happened freshman year. Then I was like, it was almost like I was getting a chance to make up for lost time. And then I found out how hard it is to get this job. And I set out to knock their gold toad's socks off with my creativity.
Yeah. A lot of people want this job.
Yeah. I had no idea because I had never seen it, like I said, and they were choosing 10 people out of 1,000 applicants, or as I like to say, it was dog eat dog.
So you had to figure out a way to set yourself apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. As did all the other people. I'm sure they were thinking, okay, how can I stand out? But you actually did it.
I did. Thank you. And it's funny, I'll share what I did because I really was in such a low place that I know it's going to sound silly, but like, I was like, if I don't get this job, I'm going to kill myself. That's like, that's truly how low I was at the time. And it makes me so sad now to think about 21-year-old me. Actually, I was 20 when I applied, being just like that desperate, but it really fueled me. And so I was like, everybody's going to put puns in their cover letter. Like that's obvious, you know? But I still did it. So I said like, a hearty hot dog. Hello to you. ! I recently traveled to Europe where I got to use real French and Swiss francs. What a lucky dog I was! ! And the whole thing is like completely riddled with puns. And then I catered my resume to the job and I was like bragging about my excellent driving record and my impending BSS degree in bologna sandwich skills because I thought that was so hilarious. But I was like, but everybody's going to do this. You know, like that to me is just, it was like so basic. And so
that's like the standard. That's the baseline.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I was like, I know I'm better than that. So I put a cassette together of me singing self-promotional songs. And it was around the holidays, so I called it Rockin' Robin's Hot Dog Holiday Favorites. And I didn't know how to do anything. Like, I didn't know how to do graphic design. I didn't know how to do any kind of audio production. But I just, like, would book the studios, put myself in those rooms, and, like, throw in Winter Wonderland and sing over that. So what I did was I did parodies of the holiday songs because it was around the holidays. And I did, now that I'm singing a second song for you, Scott, provided you include the first part of me teasing you about the Wizard of Oz, I'm hoping you recognize this song, or at least the song on which it's based. So I did like, Oscar Mayer, do you hear me? Wanna be in that weenie? I'll drive it around all over the town. Wanna be a hot dogger. And like, I just kept going. And then I did another one because I was like, yeah, I'm Jewish. I got to represent my peeps. So I did Robin Gelfenbein, Robin Gelfenbein, that is my name all the time. This job will be mine. My shoe size is 9. I'm Jewish, but I dig on swine. And so I was like, you know, they get to see my personality, my sense of humor. And then I drew a Christmas tree for the outside of it on the cassette itself. I drew a Christmas tree with little hot dog ornaments and a menorah with little hot dog candles, which is like so sacrilege. And,
it's like you were channeling Weird Al Yankovic with yes. all the parodies and stuff.
Uh-huh. As you can imagine, I was a huge Weird Al fan as a kid. He still is quite talented. So I sent it off, but I still was like so in such a bad place that I was like, they're not going to hire me. And then I got a letter, because that's how we rolled back then. And I get a letter, and I have my first meeting with the Syracuse district manager for Oscar Mayer. And he and I got along famously. Like, I was so happy that, and he had listened to my cassette, I think. So I was like, oh, sweet. You know, like he knows my work. And so, and then I like wiggled my ears because I didn't want to, you know, lie about my special skills on my resume. Like, I was so eager beaver. And I mean, I felt like it went well, but I don't know, you know. And then I waited and waited and waited and found like another letter from Oscar Mayer saying that I cut the mustard, and they flew me to Madison, Wisconsin. And what they did in terms of winnowing down the field of applicants was they started out with 1,000, they broke it down to 40, and then second interviews were done with 10 people each. And I got flown out to Madison. The night before, they had a hot dog social with like the senior execs and the other applicants. And they wanted to see like how you got along with people, like if you were personable and friendly and could carry on conversations, because it's such a huge part of the job. But also if they want to see if you could, like if you ate hot dogs, because like the year before, a vegetarian had slipped through the cracks. And that's when I met Russ. And Russ, I'm smiling. Your listeners can't tell that I'm smiling, but I'm smiling because I just texted him yesterday. He's like a sweetheart of a man. But at the time, I had heard how absolutely intimidating he was, because he was a former Army sergeant. They had a former Army sergeant running the Wienermobile program. Like, what? And so he gave me one word answers. You know, I just was like I was so excited about this opportunity. Anyway, so the next morning they do, we're up at 7 a.m. right in the conference room. And like, you have 9 back-to-back meetings, everything's super intense. And I'm sitting in the conference room with all of my competition. I mean, basically it's like a reality show, and people like pulled out all the stops. I mean, like in the past, like I had heard about a guy who'd made like a miniature version of the Wienermobile, and he did not get the job. Like, apparently he did too much. But one of the other people, so basically they have you meet with like PR, HR, marketing, sales, you know, all different people within the organization.
And they all have like a vote on who gets it, or?
Yeah. And then they also have you do an on-camera interview, which is a huge, because media was such a huge part of our job, they wanted to see how you did on camera. And anyway, so one guy did a debate between Ross Perot and Bill Clinton as to which condiment is best on a hot dog. And that was like part of his on-camera interview. And I was just like, oh man. And of course I had prepared something, you know, because I didn't know. I was given a hot tip. I was very excited because one of the people recruiting at Syracuse was a Syracuse grad. And he said, I'm going to give you a little insider information. After they ask you all your questions during the on-camera interview, he's going to ask you if you have anything to add. And that's your opportunity to shine. And I was like, awesome, because I wouldn't have known that. And so I wouldn't have prepared this. I prepared, of course, another song, but this time I brought my tap shoes, not factoring in that I'd be tap dancing on carpet. So when I got to this conference room, I was devastated. I was like, no, like I thought about everything else, you know, Scott, I was like tap dancing in the bathroom, trying to do it quietly so my competition wouldn't hear me, like as I'm practicing in between interviews.
Did you carry the shoes in with you, or were you wearing
them? I had a backpack. Oh, yes. No, I did. But you know, you would have, I did wear them in. You would have thought, like, you're walking down the carpet throughout the whole, like, Hot Dog HQ. Like, how could you not think about, you think they're going to have, like, hardwood floors in there? Like, what, you know, I just didn't think about it. And so once I got there, I was really upset.
And you couldn't exactly bring a big piece of plywood or something to.
No.
Work
no, yeah. And there wasn't even a conference table I could consider getting on if I wanted to. Let me tell you, I was desperate. I wanted that job badly. So I just launched into my routine and I sang and I asked the guy behind the camcorder, you know, to pan down to my shoes so they could see I'd gone the extra mile. And I mean, I looked ridiculous. Like doing, I don't know if you know wings, I can show you. I'm trying to describe like what wings are for your audience. It's basically like a tap dancer's like premier move where it's just like you look like, well, the way I describe it is like I look like a snow angel on crack, but it was bananas. And when I was done, like the guy gave me nothing, no response. And I was so embarrassed. And I thought, they hate me. Like, I just made such an ass out of myself. And so.
Worst interview ever, right? Or on camera. Yeah.
WURST. Heyo. So, I was like, I got to redeem myself. And that's when I was going to meet with Russ, the Wienermobile manager, AKA Top Dog. And so the thing about Russ was like, you know, I already mentioned the fact that he was a former Army sergeant, but he was like really stoic and he had this weird habit of breathing like Darth Vader, which was disconcerting and so intimidating. And so I go in, I sit in his office. He's got this small table, asks me a bunch of questions and I respond and then ask him a bunch of questions. And then I ask him if he had a chance to listen to my Wienermobile demo. And he opens his top desk drawer and sitting there is Rockin' Robin's Hot Dog Holiday Favorites. And I am so excited. I was like, oh my God, he knows my work. This is awesome. And then he goes, oh, you're this Robin? Oh, oh man. Just like dagger in the heart. And I'm like, what does that even mean? You know, like, I'm like, am I too much? Like, what's, you know? And so I was like, well, if you want, so then he tells me he hasn't listened to it. I said, well, if you want, I can listen to it. You can listen to it on my Walkman. And he's like, that won't be necessary. And then I was like, how about this? Why don't I sing a few songs that didn't make it on the album? And I didn't even let him answer. And I sang, so I, on the plane ride, I had written two more parodies. And I sang the first one. And when I was done, I had zero response. And I was just like, oh God, this is mortifying, but I still have to try. I was like, I did my homework. You know, like I want to show you how badly I want this. I sang the second song. And the last thing I sang was, I'm going to have this job before I'm dead. Those were the lyrics. And he goes, I'm like, what does that mean? I don't know how to read this room. I'm so confused, you know? And I get on the plane and I cry the whole flight home. I'm just like, I mean, the biggest ass out of myself. Russ hates me. Everybody over there thinks I'm like such a clown. And, you know, like it was just, my self-esteem was already shattered and that just felt like it pushed me farther down. And I went back to school and like, there were so few jobs at the time and I was interviewing for like Bugle Boy jeans. I don't have any passion for fashion. Like all I want to do is drive a Winnebago, you know? And then like a month or 6 weeks pass and I get a phone call and I hear Robin. Like, I know that voice. This is before caller ID, people. I'm like, I know that voice. I know that weird breathing. And he's like, this is Russ calling from Oscar Mayer. We'd like to offer you a position as one of our hot doggers. And I'm like, so excited and just jumping up and down and screaming and crying. And it was like, you know, he may as well have proposed to me. I was so happy. And and yeah, that job was still to this day. And I've done some really, I'm very lucky. I've done some really cool things, but that was hands down the best job in the world. Best job in the world. I loved it. And I found out later, and this is me tooting my own horn, and I'm not trying to sound boastful, but given what I've now shared about how I was so, I doubted myself throughout that entire process, I found out later that I was their top choice.
Wow. Right from the start.
Mm-hmm. I didn't honestly find that out until probably about 10 years ago. He said something to me when I was working on my solo show about it. And I was like, are you kidding me? I mean, just to know how absolutely depressed and how I just was so hopeless and I thought I was worthless. And to know that out of 1,000 people, I was their first choice was like, I'm like, you should have told me that then, dude. But I mean, I was able to have the job. It didn't matter.
I guess they wouldn't want to respond or applaud or anything like that to give you false hope if you didn't get chosen, I suppose.
That's true, because it was, you know, by committee. Yeah, because they're really trying to find the right mix of people to represent the brand. Because, I mean, the web was around then, but it wasn't, I mean, we just basically, I mean, it was barely around. So they didn't really have any, we were their foot soldiers. And so they really want to find people who are trustworthy, because we're driving around in this $1 million vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, and it's their brand. Yeah,
exactly. So they wanted to make sure we were representing them really well. So that's part of the reason why it's such a hard job to get. And the other piece was, like, we were pitching media all the time, so they wanted to know that it's different from the mobile marketing programs now. Like, if you see the, like, a Red Bull or like the Hershey Kiss mobile, those sorts of things, quite often they're just handing out coupons or they're handing out little, you know, premium items or trinkets. But the majority of our job was getting media attention in all the markets we visited. Of course, like, being kind to people and, you know, fun and entertaining and engaging. But that's why it's so hard to get, is because you need to have, they trained us on that, but on media relations, but they really wanted people who had those skills and that creativity to really be entrepreneurial in a sense.
So what kind of training did you have to go through? What did they do?
I went to Hot Dog High, and it was a week-long program that took place at Oscar Mayer. And it was really detailed and really thorough. And I was always a good student, so I was like eating it up, you know, no pun intended. And what they walked us through was, we learned a lot about the product. We went on tour of the facility. We learned about media relations, how to work with meat managers and sales reps in all the different markets. You know, we learned how to drive the vehicle, how to maintain it, all the things about, this is sort of boring, but, like, you know, expenses, because everything we did was not digital. And we did a lot of training for, like, on-camera stuff. They would, you know, we had to learn a lot about which sound bites they wanted us to use. We were certainly, they gave us a ton of, like, leeway in terms of things that we could say on our own and, you know, funny puns and that kind of stuff. But they did a lot teaching us how to pitch media, because we would have these things, oddly enough, called bacon guides, these big directories of different media outlets across the country. They were huge. They were like much larger than like a phone book. And inside there you'd have like assignment editors and producers and all these people to pitch.
So did you have to book yourself on these, for these appearances?
Well, they gave us a schedule 3 months in advance for where we would be, like, visiting grocery stores or.
So this was all, that stuff was planned out. You had a schedule to, you're traveling here to here, or appear at this address and all that. You didn't have to come up with all that on your own then. That's good.
No, we didn't. But we did. So let's say we were going to be in Pittsburgh for like a radio promo or something and visiting, they called them store calls. We would also plan our own events around that. So we might do like take a wiener to work, and we would do a radio morning show where we would ask people like, why is your boss a wiener? And why does he or she deserve a ride to work in the Wienermobile? And, or we would do like, this is one of my favorite things to do, is like take kids to the prom. And so we did a radio contest for that. And, you know, so that we'd be bantering with the hosts, but I would like pitch those ideas to producers. Or we would visit children's hospitals. We delivered Meals on Wheels. And so once all of those events that we were supplementing for sort of the anchor events for that that corporate had set up for us, then I would be pitching media around those events as well.
Was it always just you driving, or you have like a co-pilot, or is it just you traveling around?
I had a co-pilot. His name is Jason. He was my complete opposite, which is why I'm working on a screenplay about this experience. I did a solo show about it many years ago, but it's, you know, it's like a fun buddy movie based on my life experience of like, he listened to hip hop, I listened to show tunes, like he was a complete horn dog, I was a virgin, like he broke the rules, I was a total rule follower. So like everything about it was just like, you know, it's like made for a movie. It's like these two opposites trapped together in a 23 foot long fiberglass hot dog, you know, crisscrossing the country in the Wienermobile. So that made things a little bit actually incredibly challenging, because he didn't want to do any work. And I was like, this job means everything to me. I don't want to lose it. So it was, I mean, there's so many funny things that we, you know, he would like drag race the Wienermobile. He'd do donuts in the Wienermobile. And I am like screaming, freaking out, because I didn't want people to see us, because I was always afraid, like, people might know people who work at Oscar Mayer. They might know people who work for Kraft, and they're going to call and say, I just saw the Wienermobile doing, you know, I can't even say we were ever speeding, but because that thing moves so slowly, but yeah, like, so there's a lot of fear around us getting into trouble.
Right. And it's not like there's 10 Wienermobiles in the Northeast United States that, you know, they wouldn't know who it is. Obviously they would figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. Cause there are only 6 Wienermobiles on the road at any given time. And our territory was huge. It was Toronto to Virginia to Ohio.
Does the company encourage all the hot dog puns? And actually my real question is, do they discourage sexual innuendo hot dog puns?
Big time.
I could imagine that's not their brand. They don't.
Not at all. They're very milk and cookies. They're very family oriented. So one of the things they told us was to never park the Wienermobile like in or near, like in front of or near like unsavory places, like a bar or a strip club. And I remember when that Anthony Weiner scandal came out, I think this was like 7 years ago or maybe longer. Somebody said to me like, oh, they should totally milk this. And I was like, they're never going to do that.
No way.
That's not who they are at all. You can get media, certainly, but it's absolutely completely off brand for them. But yeah, otherwise, I mean, like every other, they gave us a list of pork puns. And then of course we came up with our own, you know.
What kind of crazy stuff happened while you were out driving this thing?
Well, when we were at the Cleveland Air Show, and I remember one night these guys from the Blue Angels were walking around the vehicle, and I was a little suspicious of what they were doing, but I think I went upstairs to my hotel. I think we had to leave early the next day or something. So I didn't really say, I don't even think I said anything to Jason, but when we came down to leave, our license plate had been stolen, and all of the Wienermobiles have fun vanity plates, like hot dog. They're not the most creative. Hot dog, Oscar. Ours was called Our Dog. One's called Wiener. You know, the one I always wanted to drive was Big Bun, because I just thought that was such a fun name. So I was like, oh man. And so really bummed about that, because I never wanted to call Russ for something like that, you know, because he put the fear of God in everyone. So Jason took it upon himself to make us a temporary license plate out of a manila folder and washable markers, which is really smart, really, really creative. Dumbass. And so anyway, so I was like, we are such, like, nobody can miss us on the road, you know, but whatever. So we drive through Ohio. We drive all the way across 80 through Pennsylvania. We cross into New Jersey, and within seconds, we get pulled over. And I thought it was hilarious. It was about 3 months into the job, and I had a camcorder with me. It was a graduation gift, and I was like, ooh, this is going to be great footage for my Wienermobile demo, and that demo, movie or documentary. Because what they had always they told us at Hot Dog High was like, you don't have to worry. I mean, obviously we had to obey all speed limits and traffic laws and all of that, of course. But they said, you know, quite often if you get pulled over, it's usually the cops just wanting to say they pulled over the Wienermobile, and you can give them some Wiener whistles, which are, you know, just these little tchotchkes and
bribery.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. It's funny how like a little trinket can get you out of a ticket, you know, or so I thought. So, I mean, people didn't really carry on cameras then, but if they had a disposable camera with them, then they, you know, they might want to take some pictures with it. So as soon as we got pulled over, I was like, this is going to be hilarious. And so I'm in the back. The way the Wienermobile is set up is like, you actually are sitting in front of the engine where the driver and the passenger are. And then we had this thing behind there called the doghouse, which covers the engine. And that's what we would climb over. So I'm sort of leaning on the engine, and I'm taking a shot of the side mirror with the police car's like lights going, and you can see a little bit of the car itself.
You're already picturing how this is going to play on the big screen.
Exactly.
Right?
I'm a storyteller. Okay. I was like, ooh, I'm going to open with this shot. And Jason turns around. And by the way, we had uniforms all the time. They were like ketchup and mustard colored uniforms. Jason turns around. He's got a tie-dye shirt on. And he is like, put that away. And I was like, oh, come on. This is going to be great footage. And he was so nervous. He's like, put it away. I'm like, fine. And so I did, very reluctantly. Cop comes up. And this guy is like, kind of, you know, sort of stereotypically, like, he was a New Jersey state trooper. He was sort of like James Gandolfini and a little Danny DeVito, but like with all the personality of Dick Cheney. So, you know, you're expecting him to, I'm thinking he's going to think this is funny, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's not having it. He's like, license and registration. And then he makes Jason get out of, it's always funny to hear cops, they're like, I need you to get out of, and then he's like looking at this thing up and down, he's like, out of the car. And so we had a gull wing door, they still do, sort of like Kit from Knight Rider, like the way it opens on the side, the doors open on the side. And Jason goes out and he is shitting his pants, he's so nervous, and I'm like, I don't know what he's so afraid of. He goes and talks to the cop. I can't really hear what's happening. He comes back in. He's still nervous. And he says he wants to talk to you. And in my head, I'm like, I'm going to take care of this situation. I got this. I go flying out of the Wienermobile. I've got a Goofy t-shirt on, like literally has Goofy on it. And I'm like, hello, officer. And he's like, where are you headed? And I'm like, well, tomorrow we're doing a hot dog eating contest in Secaucus. And like, you know, I'm like giving him like our full schedule. And I was like, you should come. Like, what a dork. And then he says, where are you coming from? And I was like, oh, we're at the Cleveland Air Show. Da-da. And then he says, do I have any reason to suspect anything illegal in this vehicle? And I was like, illegal? Huh? And he's like, any substances? And I was like, right on the spot, Scott, I go, no, there's no hash in this hot dog. And I'm like so proud of myself coming up with a pun right there. And like, he doesn't react to that. But I'm like, I don't give up, you know. So anyways,
you're used to this reaction from your audition, though.
That's right? True. That's true. Yeah. It's like, don't tell me. He's not even telling me no. It's like, don't even give me no. Anyway, so then he says something like, well, how do I know you didn't drive this thing up here from Colombia? And I'm like, what is he talking? Like in my head, I'm like, this man is insane. So I said to him, I was like, well, you know, officer, with all due respect, like, have you ever heard of Oscar Mayer? And he's like, yeah, but how do I know you didn't just slap this logo on the side of your car? And I'm like, slap a logo? like I just happen to have a 23-foot long fiberglass hot dog car at my disposal. Like, wait, what? It was insane. And anyway, so he ends up saying, like, I'm going to need to impound this vehicle. Oh no, he says I want to search it for drugs. I'm like, be my guest, because I'm thinking there's no drugs in here. And then I go back in. Cop goes back to his squad car, and I'm talking to Jason. I was like, yeah, he said something about wanting to search it for drugs, and Jason's like, what? And I said, yeah, I'm like, you know, but in my head, I'm like, we're fine. And he's like, you know, Robin, we let people in here every single day. Somebody could have planted something. And he was like so nervous. And so he's like running to the back of the Wienermobile, because the back quarter of the Wienermobile is all storage. And he was freaked out. And he comes back out. The cop goes in. He searches the Wienermobile. We're standing out on the side of the highway. And he ends up coming back out a little while later. And he's like, I'm going to need to impound this vehicle. And at the time, I didn't know what that meant. And so I was like, okay. and Jason's like, shit. And so we were like, but why? And he's like, well, your registration's not coming up in our system. And we call Russ, and Russ works it out with him, because this guy had been looking it up as a car, and it's registered as a truck. And that was all he needed to do. Finally, we were like sent on our way.
Even with without a real license plate, he let you keep going?
Well, he insisted we get a new one. And so we had that shipped out. I think we got it like 2 days later.
But you were going to get that anyway, even if you didn't get pulled over, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a car phone, but we didn't have cell phones. So like, we didn't know until we got down to the Wienermobile that, you know, the license plate had been stolen. So,
so you got pulled over.
First time I was ever pulled over was in the Wienermobile. First time I ever drove in New York City was in the Wienermobile, which was terrifying because there's no rear view mirror, just side mirrors.
Oh, that seems dangerous.
Yes, it does.
How do you back up?
With help. I mean, the one they have now, they have that rear camera.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Back
when I drove.
When I drove back in the day.
Like, I would need Jason to get out and help direct me. And, like, parking it, you have to take up two spots. You have to park diagonally, parallel. I'm a really good driver, and I'm a really good parallel parker. But parallel parking that thing is really, really hard.
That's probably one of the big reasons for having a co-pilot, too.
Oh, sure. I mean, I was grateful for Jason because he was, I hate to say, like, all about, he grew up going to like lots of NASCAR races because his dad worked at Daytona Motor Speedway. So he was like really into cars. So he was good about like keeping the thing running, checking the oil, all that kind of stuff. They would never want to have two people. Like, you get so lonely. Like, you could make friends everywhere, but because we were rarely in places for longer than like a day. I mean, if we got to stay somewhere for like two or three nights, it was a luxury.
What was it like on your last day of the job?
The last day of the job was so disappointing. That summer. So they let me, the job is usually for a year, and they asked me to stay on, and I traveled through Canada that summer, and I got to travel in some other regions in the U.S. I think I saw about half of the states in the Wienermobile, which is a really cool way to see the world. And I was back on the road in the States. And so I was finishing up in October, and I was at the Clausen Pickle Factory on a Saturday to do like a family event, where they were serving like vanilla cake with vanilla frosting and pickles. And my job My job, Kraft owned, they probably still do, the own Klaus and Pickles. By the way, those pickles are delicious. Like I love pickles. Anyway, so Russ came up, which was nice because I got to bid him adieu. And I was traveling with somebody else. It was a new part of the hot dogger team. And my job that day, it was pouring out. And my job was to give kids a ride in the Wienermobile, but like in the circle in front of the building. Like it was just like doing a loop, and it wasn't a big loop. So that was what I was doing. I'm sure I handed out Wiener whistles too. So, you know, I got to go to Mardi Gras, the Wienermobile. I got to go to the Commonwealth Games in Vancouver in the Wienermobile. And I got to wrap up my tour of duty at the Klaus and Pickle Factory. No one's ever asked me about the last event that I did. I mean, it's so fitting for me because it's funny, you know.
That's fun. Well, it sounds like it was quite a great experience, obviously.
Fun's a fun.
Yeah, and gives you all kinds of great stories to tell. And speaking of stories, you have experience with storytelling. I know people listening to this wouldn't have any idea that that would be the case. But you are, in looking at your information online, you are not just a great storyteller. You have actually performed on The Moth, which mm-hmm. I'm sure a lot of my listeners listen to that podcast. And not just performed on The Moth, but you've won The Moth Story Slam 3 times. Mm-hmm. That's got to be a pretty amazing thing.
Thanks. Yeah.
I don't know how you're supposed to respond to that, but I think it's pretty amazing.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I think it's funny because I called myself the Susan Lucci of The Moth because I came in second so many times over. I started going to The Moth in 2009, and I fell in love with storytelling. There were other storytelling shows. I live in New York City, which I know you know, but just to let your listeners know. And I was like, oh my gosh, I love this. And I lost by a tenth of a point. I mean, I was ridiculous. And then when I won, it was, you're not going to believe this. It was last year. It took me that long. Well, I also stopped going for a while because I have my own storytelling show and I was getting booked on other people's shows. But, the best part of my first win was that I beat the guy who was going for his 40th Moth win that night.
Wow.
And he's a friend of mine. And just to give like a little bit of background for your listeners, if they've never gone to a live Moth event, when they have story slams, they pick 10 people out of a bag. They call it a hat. It's a bag. You generally, like, you've got a good chance to win if you are chosen, like, 8th, 9th, or 10th, because the scoring the scores start really low at the beginning of the evening, because people don't know what's coming up, because you don't know who's performing. They only get picked after the last person's done.
So there's a strategy there, yeah.
Yeah, so I was chosen 8th. So I was like, okay, and I knew I had a good story. And then I picked, so then the storyteller, they have the storyteller pick the next person. So I reach my hand into the bag, I pull it out, and it's a very good friend of mine, my friend Stacy. And I'm like, damn it, because she's won The Moth a bunch too. She goes up, and she does a great job, but I'm still winning. And then she picks Matthew Dix, who again is a friend of mine. He's a phenomenal storyteller. And I was like, shit. He's 10th. He wins all the time. Like, I didn't know he was going for his 40th. And I'm like, he's got, like, he's in the sweet spot. And when he's done, everybody's applauding. My friend leans over to me. She's like, I don't know, Rob. Like, he did really well. And in my head, I'm like, fuck you. Like, you know. And I said to her, I go, I'm still going to beat him. And they announced they tabulate the scores. Everybody can see the scoreboard, by the way. And I was like, yes. and I beat him. And he's incredibly competitive, and I was really excited. And he was funny because he shared something on Facebook. He was like, if I'm going to lose to anybody, he's like, I was happy to lose to Robin. It's incredulous that it's been this long without her winning. And then after that, it was like a snowball effect where I won several after that.
Well, some of your Moth performances are online, right? On your YouTube channel, maybe, or on your website, so people can go and listen to that.
So yeah, if you go to my YouTube channel for my storytelling show, is called Yum's the Word Show. And I think the title for that video is even like my moth winning story. So you can see that story there. And it's such a fun story to tell. I love that story so much. And there's a lot of content on my website too. It's robingelfenbein.com.
When I listen to the moth stories on the podcast, I always wonder, a lot of these people that do this are not professional storytellers, I don't think, anyway. Oh. They just have an experience they want to talk about, but you don't hear them stumbling for words. You don't hear a lot of crutch words like and you know, and that kind of thing. It's like they have it, they're delivering it like it's the first time they've delivered it, but it almost has to be memorized completely, right?
I think a lot of them do when they don't have as much experience. As I say, and I say, I hate memorizing my stories, mostly because I want it to sound as natural and conversational as possible. You know, I've been doing this for 11 years. I'm used to telling stories. And I also, to be honest, like I just hate rehearsing. But the thing with the moth is that you're really limited to the time they give you, 5 minutes. It depends. Like if it's a main stage show where the directors work with you, then you have more time. But typically for people who don't generally do this, like I do this professionally, they will memorize because they don't have the experience and they don't have, and this is a generalization, it's certainly not the case for everybody, they don't necessarily trust that they're going to remember everything. The thing that I always tell my storytelling students is know your first line and know your last line, because you want to nail those really well. But everything in between, even though we've worked on stories together and developed stories together, the audience isn't going to know. But we as the audience want to know that we're in good hands as soon as you start. And we want you to stick that landing in a really satisfying way. And endings are so, so hard to do. So anyway, so I try to not, I just don't like memorizing, because I just want. And the other thing is, when you memorize, I find I'm not as present with my story. I try to relive my stories when I share them as much as I can. I really want to imagine that world again so you can see that same world that I'm living in.
All right. I got to ask you this. I know, and I don't want to take too much of your time, but you had the opportunity to meet a comedy legend, Jerry Stiller, because you live in New York City. Obviously, he did as well. Can you just tell us about how that went?
About 15 years ago, I met his daughter, Amy Stiller, Ben Stiller's sister. And she and I would bump into each other in the neighborhood. I live on the Upper West Side. And one night I was walking home from a first and last date. And we just bumped into each other, said hello. And I had seen on Facebook earlier that day that it was her father's birthday. And I said, hey, tell my fellow Syracuse grad happy birthday. And she said, do you want to tell him yourself? And in my head, I'm like, doing cartwheels. I'm like doing high fives to myself. I'm like, oh my God. And so I was like playing it cool. Like, oh yeah, that'd be great. Sure. If that's cool. And she said, yeah, come on. He lives a block away from me, or he lived a block away from me. I didn't know that. So we're walking into her parents' apartment, and I'm like walking through a comedy hall of fame as soon as I set foot in that door, because there are photos of Ben Stiller when he's a kid, and plenty of pictures of Amy and Ann Mira and Jerry Stiller. I mean, all over the place. It was a very cozy home. And I was like, I cannot believe I'm about to meet Jerry Stiller. And I've worked with a lot of celebrities for my Yum's the Word show, which is my storytelling show here in New York City. But it, like, this is like somebody who's like on a whole other echelon because he's such a legend. And but I wasn't nervous. I was just excited. And we walk into this big living room, and off in the kitchen there are these three women sitting there giggling, and Amy says, "Dad, I want you to meet a friend of mine." And I walk in front of him because his back was facing me, and he's got this like Superman apron on or something. And I was like, what a character, you know? And I said, "Happy birthday." And he was so gracious and so kind. And I am a huge, huge Seinfeld fan. But Ann Mira had just passed away 2 weeks earlier. And I just didn't want to, I didn't really know, like, should I say anything about that? Should I keep it not focused on that? You know, I wasn't really sure how to approach things. And I just didn't want to be that person who's like, "Oh my God, I love you. I'm Seinfeld." Like, "Oh my God, I love Frank Costanza," you know, like, and kind of go bananas. So I just kind of, he came out of the gate with so many questions for me, asking me about the work I do. And I told him about my Yum's the Word show and how I make ice cream cakes for it. And Amy said, Dad, Robin drove the Wienermobile. And he didn't know what that was. So I had to explain to him what it was. And he said, so what is this, like a vaudeville act? Like you'd pull out a stage in front of this fakakta car? And I was like, no, I didn't perform. Cause I told him about how I tapped in to get the job. So he thought that I was performing, you know, like traveling around from city to city. And, he was absolutely lovely. Just asked me. He was so genuinely interested in me, asked me so many questions. And of course I asked him plenty of questions too, but I really just kept it very, we talked about Syracuse cause he's got such, he had such fondness for Syracuse too. And yeah, I never said anything about Seinfeld the whole time, but she said, "Dad, we should go see Robin's show." And I said, "Yeah, well, of course I would love to have you, you know, anytime as my guests." And he said, I would love to come. He's like, "I can tell you're really funny," which, oh my God, like the best compliment in the world coming from him. And I wish I was like, can you say that again? Let me just record you saying that. And then again, with me trying to play it cool, because I didn't know Amy that well at the time. So I wanted to be really respectful. So I said to them, you know, my aunt went to Syracuse. She graduated in, when she graduated, like 59 or, I said, I know she'd really love a picture. And I was 1,000% asking for myself.
Of course.
and she said, "Oh yes, of course. And so we took a couple of pictures, and one he was being a little bit of a ham, and then the other one he was smiling. And I was, you know, I'm standing behind him. He's got this Superman little apron on, and he was a love. I don't even remember if I hugged him, but I was giddy. Like, oh, the coolest. I mean, one of the coolest things in their house was, or their apartment, is that they had these. Do you know who Al Hirschfeld was?
No.
Okay, so he's this famous illustrator. If you Google it, he used to do all these black and white illustrations of Broadway stars, all kinds of celebrities, and they're very like, if you get one of those, like, you have made it sort of thing. They had two of those in their apartment, of like, you know, Stiller and Mira. And yeah, and I was just so moved by how lovely he was and so sweet. And
that had to be, it just had to be almost surreal, you know. And obviously Amy had no idea that would have such an effect on you. Just for her, just, "Hey, come on and meet Dad."
Yeah, and it's interesting because I wrote a blog post about it shortly after he passed away. And I was really, I originally just wrote it as a Facebook post. And I didn't want to do anything that felt like exploitative, given that the one time I met him. But I spent a few hours writing it because I really wanted to be very careful with how I was like paying my own respect to him for just the few, you know, we were probably together for hour and a half. And so I wrote my post, I hit, you know, publish or post or whatever it is. And I was like, because I tagged her and I'm like, I don't know how she's going to react. Like, you know, I don't know where she, how she's feeling. Like, he just passed away. You know, like, this is in the middle of COVID. Like, I don't know how she's going to respond to this. And she wound up saying something in the comment. And then she emailed me and then she called me and she left me the loveliest message. And she said, thank you so, so much for writing that beautiful tribute. It just reinforced why I was so happy that I got to show my friends who the real Jerry was. And you just completely captured that in your Facebook post. And that just meant so much to me. And I said, well, I can share it as a blog post if you want. And she's like, yes, please. And so I was like, to me, like, I'm always trying to be really respectful. Certainly when somebody's family member passes away and when they're that big, you know, I'm like, she's probably so overwhelmed.
Yeah. For media requests and all that stuff. Yeah. Well, we'll have that picture on the website, mm-hmm. to show notes for this episode, along with all your social links and everything. What are you doing now? How can people find you or online, or what are you up to these days?
I have been doing a lot of things during the pandemic. I wanted to serve as much as I could and continue to make people laugh and take their minds off of what I call the C word. And so I've been teaching storytelling. I call it Storytelling Fun 01, and it's for anybody who wants to learn how to tell a story. You don't have to ever share it at the Moth, but storytelling is such an unbelievably valuable skill to have in life for moments like this, you know, talking to somebody like you. You can use it for job interviews. You could use it on a date. There's just a lot of, and there's a lot of business reasons for it too. And so I've been teaching storytelling. So there's information about my virtual classes on my site. But the thing that I've been most proud of during the pandemic that I created is a show for kids, and it's called Recess with Auntie Robin. And I started that on March 13th. And it's a very, very interactive, very fun show for kids. And I created it because I really wanted to help out parents who were just thrust into this, like everybody else, like this very intense time. I really wanted to give them a break, and I really wanted to give kids an opportunity to just play and be silly. And so I make it really interactive. And we're on hiatus now, but I'm bringing it back in the fall because I know, you know, every schools all over the place are doing different things and kids are going to be home still. And they dictate a lot of what happens on that show. I let them have a lot of creative say in the content. And it's always really, really fun, and I'm really proud of it. So you can find out information about that on my site as well. Or if you have a company, and because there's a company I'm talking to, they want to offer it to their employees as an option too, so that they can, it's like, okay, for an hour, they're going to be so entertained and engaged, and I can go take my meeting or whatever it is, or whatever they want to do during that time, just give parents a break. But it's really like, there was a big gap when schools were closed and kids weren't able to see their friends and they didn't have an opportunity to be social. And that's a huge part of their development. And so I had kids tuning in from all over Arizona, Massachusetts, Charlotte, Bay Area. So it's really fun.
Well, this has been a blast.
It's been fun for me as I sit here in the dark. I feel like I'm doing like the Blair Witch Project because I've got like, I don't know why I didn't think to put the light on.
It has gotten dark since we've started this,
but dark.
This is great. You know, I contacted someone a while back who also had driven a Wienermobile, and he never got back to me. So I'm kind of glad he didn't, because
I mean, selfishly, I'm glad he didn't either. And I think honestly, I'm obviously very biased. I think it's more fun to talk to somebody who did it a long time ago when we didn't have the conveniences that we do now. Like, I didn't have a laptop when I was on the road. I had to find Kinko's and write my press releases, like rent their computers and fax my press releases. Like, it was a lot more difficult to do it then. There's just, you know, there's pros and cons to both. You know, it's like we didn't have Instagram, so people could take pictures and they would never get shared anywhere. You know,
the dark ages. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm like one of the originals in a way, because the program started in 88. I didn't do it in 88. I did 93, 94. So, you know, it's like, we're a pretty proud bunch.
Yeah. Way back in the beginning. That's cool. Well, thanks for sharing.
Thanks for having me. That's a wiener whistle, people. These are the ones I drove. I mean, these are the ones I handed out. They have different ones now.
I got to get a picture of that too.
The wiener whistle?
Yeah. I mean, that's what you gave out to everybody, right?
Yeah, I did. And those go back because they used to be part of the hot dog packaging. They had wiener whistles as like a prize.
Oh, okay. I didn't know either, that.
They don't do that anymore, obviously. So the only place you can get a wiener whistle is either from the Wienermobile itself. That's actually the only place now. I think you can probably order them online. Or if you meet me, because I have a stash.
I bet they're on eBay too.
I'm sure they are. But I have like a Wienermobile bank with my name on it. We call it Wienermobilia. Lots of Wienermobilia.
Man, the puns are endless.
I didn't even give you that many, but yes, they are. It's like you don't want to get sandwiched in traffic. I bet you never sausage a thing, frankly. And, my favorite one when we say goodbye is Frank's a lot.
Frank you.
Haha. That one sounds worse in some way.
I know it does. That sounds Frank terrible.
Sorry, that's really loud.
Hey, if you haven't heard yet, Raw Audio 6 is now live. You can hear actual 911 emergency calls and the backstories behind those calls. In this new episode, a woman walks into a bank not realizing that the bank was being robbed.
He's coming out. He's coming out. He's out. He's out. He's shooting the gun. Holy shit.
A man hides in his bedroom closet while burglars are in his home.
Do you see someone inside?
Yeah, he's inside right now.
Okay, where are you?
In the bedroom.
And multiple 911 calls about an active shooter in a hospital.
Because my son was in the room, they said, get back in your room, there's an active shooter situation. Mercy Southwest, is that true?
You can hear all of these by becoming a supporter of the show at whatwasthatlike.com/support. And if you haven't yet joined our private Facebook group, you're really missing out. That's where we talk about past episodes and all kinds of other stuff. And many of the guests I have on the podcast are also in that group, ready to answer your questions. Check it out at whatwasthatlike.com/Facebook. I hope you're doing okay and staying safe. I'll see you in 2 weeks.